Okay. Don't worry about it. Actually, could you roll it? Could you just start over again?
Or you sure you don't want to keep talking?
Should I? Hello, and welcome to the Greater Fool Speaks podcast, the new and improved and extended format of the Greater Fool Speaks. My name is Danny Pellegrini, and I am here with Dylan Schwartz. Dylan?
Yeah.
Say hello.
Hello.
Okay. That's Dylan's voice. Dylan is the co-host, co-creator, co-collaborator. I don't know if co-collaborator is a word, but... So just to really quickly talk about this new format and how we arrived at it... So the old Greater Fool website, I have a bunch of stories. I got almost 40, you know, essays and stories up on that website. And that's like, I did the math. It's like two books worth, literally. There's a ton of words up there. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do with these stories. I want to get published. I want to be a writer. I want to get published. But I'm a nobody. And I don't know how the publishing industry works. So they're just kind of bouncing around the social media world and whatnot. And a few months ago in November, my wife and I went to go see David Sedaris perform at Symphony Hall. And beforehand, I'm a huge fan of his. He's a big influence on me. Beforehand, I'm in line, you know, to get a book signed and say hello to the guy. Really nice guy. And I brought one of my stories with me. I brought a story called A Cheap Wedding, which came out about a year ago. I wrote it. And it was about, you know, the cheap wedding that my wife and I paid for. And I got up there and I said, you know, Mr. Sedaris, could I give you one of my stories? I felt like a total asshole. And I was totally nervous. And he said, sure. And he was really kind. And I gave him the story and kind of forgot about it afterwards. But he wrote me back a couple of months later. He wrote me back in early January, sent me this very nice letter and said really nice things about the story. I mean, I was beside myself. He was like, you know, I was delighted. I was surprised. He quoted passages from it. He said he laughed out loud. I mean, it was like getting the ultimate validation, you know, from your hero. So I was stoked. And he, at the end of the letter, he said, you know, if you're looking for representation, send your stuff, send some more of your essays to my agent and tell her I sent you. So I sent the agent a package. You know, I dusted off all my A material and everything, and I sent the agent a package. And I sent it to some other people as well. And I basically, you know, a long time went by and a couple months later, I got a rejection from her. I talked about this in my last podcast. So, and the rejection was, you know, she was very nice and she, you know, clearly read the stuff, which is amazing. But she was like, listen, you know, you're an unknown. You don't have a name. You're just a guy. You're an essayist. You know, you don't have a built-in platform. You didn't really do anything extraordinary and whatnot. So I was kind of bummed out and that's when I talked to my friend Dylan, who's sitting right next to me. And I said, dude, you know, I was like, what are we going to do? Like, I've got all these stories and I think I've got something to say. And Dylan is Dylan's an audio engineer, by the way, by trade, but he's a creative guy. You know, he's got a lot of interesting things to say. No, I'm serious. He's got interesting things to say. He's got good taste. He listens to good music. I listen to like five bands from the 90s. Dylan like has the music thing down. He's a creative dude. He's got great taste in movies and stuff. And he listens to a ton of podcasts. And Dylan said, you know, like, let's take this little thing that you're, this little grassroots thing you got going with the Greater Fool, instead of just reading your stories, you know, for 15 or 20 minutes, let's turn it into an actual podcast. And he listens to a lot of them. I listen to a couple, but you listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yeah. And I thought, if, you know, you want to do what they're telling you need to do, establish some kind of audience.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no more accessible way right now than doing a podcast and expanding upon what you're already doing so people can kind of get to know you as a person a little better.
Right. You know? Exactly. And that's, I mean, like, you know, I'm not comparing myself to anybody, but if you go see a writer read his stuff or her stuff, you know, there's a little bit of conversation in between the stories. You know, you get to know the people a little better. And I thought that was just a genius idea. I was like, great. And I was flattered that, you know, someone would, you know, be willing to kind of undertake a collaboration with me. So, So that's kind of a roundabout way of telling you how we got to this point right now. If you're a fan of, you know, the essays and stories from The Greater Fool, they're still going to be, you know, a kind of a central part of these podcasts. But we're going to have some conversational stuff. We're going to discuss the stories. We're going to talk about other things.
Talk about our own lives in relation to the stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's what the stories try to do. I mean, they're not extraordinary stories. They're very kind of like mundane things that I think a lot of people, you know, can probably relate to in some way or another. And the story that I'm going to read tonight, the story that I'm going to read in like 3 minutes actually, is called Permanent Vacation. And it's kind of a funny tale about my hair when I was younger and how much I hated my hair and, you know, the kind of effect it had on you know, my image and my identity. And I think that a lot of people can relate to that. So this story is called Permanent Vacation. As a matter of fact, when I was sending my essays out to agents, you know, last month, this was one of the ones, this is one of my favorite ones. I wrote this one a long time ago. I wrote this about three and a half, this is one of the first stories I wrote and put on the website. But it was very short when I wrote it. And, you know, you look back at stuff that you did 3 years ago and you're like, oh my God, I suck. You know, I mean, that's true with just about anything. So I polished it off. I expanded it. It's really about, now it's about three times the length. And I kept everything intact. I just expanded on some things now. I wanted to send this one. I like this story a lot. It's kind of a personal story. It's a ridiculous story. And I wanted to dust it, you know, I wanted to include this when I sent stuff to the agents, but I couldn't get it. This was like 6 weeks ago, three months ago. And I just struggled with it and I didn't have a lot of time. So, but then I revisited, and that's how things work sometimes. You revisit something after you step away for a month and all of a sudden it kind of clicks. So, so I'm going to get into the story right now. It's called Permanent Vacation, and here we go. When I look back on the cruel joke known as my life, three things stand out. Number one is my Crohn's disease. For those who don't know, Crohn's is an inflammatory bowel disease. I'd never heard of it before, and when I was diagnosed, at 19, I felt embarrassed. Not because I'd be sick for the rest of my life, but because I had a disease no one had heard of. It was like getting accepted to a crappy state school. Why couldn't I get diabetes, like Matt, I wondered. Matt was my best friend growing up. He was better looking, dated prettier girls, wore cooler clothes, and now had a more socially acceptable disease. His had to do with blood sugar, so he kept a neat diabetes kit with glucose meters and a supply of insulin shots. Mine had to do with diarrhea, so I carried around a pocket full of toilet paper. Even the name diabetes sounded cooler, strong, like a Greek warrior, while Crohn's was basically grown combined with corn. Number two is my drug addiction. Because of the chronic diarrhea, my 20s were spent tucked away in various studio apartments, wearing pajama bottoms and watching TV. I needed something to fill the gaping hole where my social life used to be. That something was opiates. I didn't even know what they were until age 23 when I had my first root canal. But once I got a taste, I spent the next 15 years hunting them down. Nothing else mattered. Friends, romance, hygiene, nothing. I thought about painkillers all day long. I dreamt about them at night. Sometimes I looked at pictures of them on the internet, gazing at the white pills the way a car aficionado stares at a vintage Mustang. Far worse than bowel disease or opioid abuse is my insufferable hair. Number three on my list of defining characteristics. I have never seen straighter hair on another living thing, human or animal. And that's not an exaggeration. I have seen straighter hair on a tennis ball, one that is old and deflated and has been smacked so many times that it is nothing but stray threads of fabric hanging on to a beaten-down nub of its former self. Even at its fullest, my hair was a thin and feathery bulb around my face. As a kid in the early 80s, this was acceptable. Anyone with straight hair under the age of 10 had the same pageboy hairdo. But as bodies matured, hairstyles followed. For most, that is. Toward the end of grammar school, my friends began parting their hair, some even combing the sides back. I watched with envy as long, swooping waves took shape on their heads. Hair hung freely above their eyes and feathered out the back, while mine remained dull and unresponsive, falling straight down, like a blanket you'd drape over a birdcage. The only time my hair obeyed was when it was soaking wet right after the shower. Those 5 minutes were glimpses into a better life. The steam would clear, and I'd stand there, comb in hand, ready to mold my hair into whoever I wanted to be. Patrick Swayze, Michael J. Fox. The possibilities were endless. I held on to the pitiful hope that it would dry that way, but of course it never did. One by one, the strands popped back into their natural place. By the time I arrived at school, my hair was the same lifeless pelt it always was. It was like a clown punching bag, the kind that's weighted at the bottom. Every time you knock it down, it just bounces back up, mocking you with that evil clown smile. One Saturday, a friend and I took the train into Boston to visit a rock and roll paraphernalia shop called Stairway to Heaven. As we walked through the commons, I saw a homeless man asleep on a blanket. What struck me wasn't the rancid smell, or the urine stain on his pant leg, or the gangrene on his toes, but rather his hair. It was a thick, elegant mane, long and dark, and just the right amount of oily. I was amazed at how it stayed back naturally, while the sides clung to his face in these lazy, seahorse-shaped curls. The symmetry and curvature were perfect, and it occurred to me that mortal hands were not capable of creating such beauty. "So unfair," I said, cursing God, thinking how I'd give anything to trade places with him. Some people are just blessed. As a dainty 12-year-old with a head like a dandelion, I was nervous about entering junior high. I'd be mixed in with hundreds of other kids, new faces from different districts, some a lot meaner than mine. To survive, I'd need to toughen up my image. So that summer, I sought counsel from Eddie Mahoney, an older boy who'd gone to my elementary school. Eddie was the bad seed, the kid your parents warned you about. He smoked cigarettes, wore denim jackets, and rode a stolen BMX bike. He also had silky blonde hair that was parted down the middle, and by some miracle stayed tight at the sides and didn't bulge out like mine. His mullet had a natural taper and even curled up slightly at the bottom. I could learn a thing or two from this guy. Eddie had already graduated from junior high and was keen on the etiquette, certain customs like how one should dress and what music they should listen to. "Aerosmith, AC/DC," he said, counting off his fingers. "Polo shirts, Capizio shoes, Jabot jeans, what else? Depp styling gel, Dracar cologne." "Wait, go back," I said. "Before Dracar, styling gel? What is that?" And that's how I discovered hair product. From Eddie Mahoney, the neighborhood bully. That afternoon, I rode my bike to CVS and bought my first bottle of Depp styling gel. It cost $2.99 and came in three colors, green, yellow, and pink, like dish soap. The colors had no real significance, only to suggest that with this product came the promise of a pastel-colored lifestyle, one that was commonly found in Miami or L.A. I spent 30 minutes each morning working with the gel, forcing a part into my hair and slicking back the sides. I slathered it on by the handful, sometimes molding individual locks to fabricate the perfect bend. Then I'd napalm the entire area with my sister's Aquanet hairspray. The sides stayed back okay, but the top looked like a rooftop made of dry wicker. When I finished, my hair was crisp and painful. It made a crunching sound when I raised my eyebrows, like tiny bones being squished under a shoe. Often I experienced headaches from the strain of the follicles, trying to free themselves from bondage. It wasn't pretty, but it got me close to where I wanted to be, and that was Tom Cruise in Top Gun. When I first saw that film, it was like meeting an older brother who'd been kept secret my whole life. Cruise's fighter pilot was the best of the best, exactly the kind of male role model I needed. My father, God bless him, wasn't really doing the trick, what with his fiery temper, sock holders, and Oldsmobile Cutlass. Cruise was cool and dangerous, tan, physically fit. He had jet black hair that was combed up and over to the side, which, more importantly, always looked wet, like he just stepped out of the shower. I brought the movie's VHS case to Bert, the 70-year-old barber who had cut my hair since I was a child. "Whatever you can do to make it like this," I said. He stared at it blankly. "Like military?" he said, in his French accent. "Not regular military," I said. "This guy rides a motorcycle. He plays beach volleyball. I scratched my head, frustrated by the cultural barrier. Have you not seen this movie? Bert nodded as though he understood, and then gave me a crew cut. When I got home, I shut myself in my bedroom until my father came and got me for dinner. I don't understand what you're so upset about, he said from behind the door. At least now you look like a normal person. No response. Son? I heard him, but I didn't feel like talking. It would take at least 2 months for my hair to grow back to Top Gun length, and I needed time to grieve. I sat and stared out my window for the rest of the night. My family viewed my hair obsession as an adolescent phase that I would grow out of in my own time frame. However, once I started dressing in the Top Gun outfit, they stepped in and voiced concern, or at least their version of it. It's not healthy for a boy your age to worry about this kind of crap, my mother said. This as I tried on a pair of used cowboy boots. Have you seen yourself? You look like an idiot. It might please you to know that a lot of kids my age wear cowboy boots, I said. Yeah, in Wyoming, my mother said. I shook my head, sighed, and put on my aviator sunglasses. Whatever, I said. I'm going to Joey's for dinner. Then I slid into my fur-lined bomber jacket and walked out into the stifling August afternoon. It takes a certain mix of courage and delusion to dress exactly like a movie character on any day other than October 31st, even more when it's the first day of ninth grade. Had the Top Gun clothes fit properly, it might have been less humiliating as I set foot into my new high school, but as it was, I looked clownish. The quart of gel in my hair had begun to melt and run down my cheeks. The aviator sunglasses made no sense, given that the school was indoors. My spindly legs were lost inside my jeans. The bomber jacket hung flat from my narrow shoulders. And since the cowboy boots were a size too big, I couldn't walk in regular strides and instead cross-country skied over the linoleum, afraid to lift my feet like a child playing dress-up in high heels. You are so cool, said one 12th grade girl, applauding as I shuffled down the school's main corridor. Though this was the desired response, I didn't think people would actually say it aloud to me, or line up and cheer, as many of the others did when I walked by. In 10th grade, I got an after-school job bagging groceries at Star Market. Good. Now you'll understand the value of a dollar, my father said. He was right. With my own money came independence. The days of $9 haircuts with Bert were over. I took my first paycheck and went to the fancy hair salon in the center of town. Wow, this is straighter than Asian hair, said Tina, one of the stylists, as she ran her hand across my head. Yours isn't just straight, but extremely fine, and it grows in two different directions. On this side, your hair grows straight down, but over here it actually grows outward. That's why the sides are uneven. I've never seen anything like this. There must be something you can do, I said. How can I get from this, I pointed to my lampshade hair, to this, I said, holding up a copy of Us magazine. It was open to a picture of Tom Cruise, standing behind a bar, tossing a bottle in the air, a still frame from the movie Cocktail. After the first day of high school, I decided to move on to another Tom Cruise movie, one with more mainstream hair and wardrobe. Well, he gets his hair permed, Tina said. It's obvious. Look at how straight his hair is here, she said, referring to the little inset photo from Top Gun. In Cocktail, his hair is wavy. It's just not natural, these two hairstyles. This one is a perm, no doubt about it. A light shone in the darkness. Can I get a perm? I said. Sure, she said, rifling through my hair some more. It won't be curly, though, right? Tina shook her head. For this, we'll do a body wave, which is like a perm, but the curlers are bigger and looser. This sounded like a miracle cure, what I'd been searching for since third grade. We'll need to wait a little while, though, Tina continued. Your hair has to be long enough for the curlers, or else it could come out kinky. I made an appointment for the following month and began the countdown. The next day, I told my friend Jason about the perm. He was a cashier at Star Market, and we often took our breaks together. We had common interests, like acting, and Tom Cruise, and hair. And not just our hair, but hair in general. A lot was happening in the industry. Where the 80s had gel, mousse, and aerosol hairspray, The 90s reintroduced pomade to the world and gave birth to a new class of product that included wax, fiber, paste, and molding clay. It was an exciting time to be alive. I would have gladly traded an internal organ for Jason's hair. It was straight, like mine, but full and held a decent part down the side. But he was bored with it, always trying new looks, never quite content with any of them. Some days he wore it straight down and in his eyes, like a surfer. Other days, it was gelled up into a messy pompadour and held back with a bandana around his forehead, a look that fell somewhere between 21 Jump Street and Color Me Bad. Each hairstyle came with its own distinct persona, too. Straight down was the Southern California dude. Gelled up with the bandana was the suave and urban white gangster, a look that seemed out of place when you factored in the blue Star Market smock and the cash register. Earlier, Jason had mentioned he was at a crossroads with his hair. He felt the pompadour look was too top 40 and was searching for something more sophisticated, something that required less product and maintenance. As inspiration, he cited scenes from two movies that best represented his ideal look. That's how particular Jason was. It wasn't just so-and-so from some movie. It was so-and-so's hair in this one specific moment. The first was Keanu Reeves in Point Break, near the end after he jumps out of the airplane and rescues Tyler. "That's it. That's the hair I want. Right there," Jason said, pausing the video as Tyler runs into Johnny Utah's arms. The second scene was in Days of Thunder, also near the end, when Tom Cruise sits in his trailer preparing for his final race and tells Nicole Kidman that he doesn't know how to do anything but drive. The latter was the most elusive. To Jason, the Days of Thunder hair was one of the great natural mysteries in the modern world. When I told him about Tina and the miracle cure, he scratched his chin, dubious, cautiously optimistic, but his eyes were sparkling. "A perm," he said. "That's not for girls." "Technically, it's a body wave," I said. "A lot of guys get them. Tina said that Tom Cruise's hair in Cocktail is a perm. She could tell right away." From his pocket, Jason pulled a folded-up page torn out of People magazine. It was Tom Cruise in his Days of Thunder racing jumpsuit. Not the specific scene he referenced, but close. "Can she make my hair like this?" he said. "I think you need to pick up the phone and call her," I said, grinning, my mouth full of potato chips. Jason scheduled his perm for the same Saturday as mine. We went to the salon together, on the bus, each with $70, money we had earned working part-time at a supermarket, money that was now being spent on perms. My appointment was first. Jason sat in the waiting area while Tina led me to her chair. She wet my hair with a spray bottle, combed it out, flattened it between her fingers, and rolled it into curling rods. Once the curler was tight against my scalp, almost painfully so, she snapped it into place with a barrette-like latch. "This is really happening," I thought, watching my head sprout with curlers. Tina passed the time by talking about her boyfriend, a landscaper named Tony. In his spare time, he fixed cars, so he always smelled like engine oil. I asked if she cut his hair, and she said no. Tony buzzed it himself. He didn't care about the way he looked. I pictured him as a tough, quiet guy with calloused hands, never talking about his feelings, if he even had any. A real man's man. "Okay, let's get you over to the hairdryer," Tina said, leading me to the room with the plastic head bubbles, where I sat between two middle-aged women. Once I was settled, Tina went to the waiting room for Jason. As they walked back, Jason looked over at me, my hair in curlers, my head under a plastic dryer, perm solution collecting at my temples. He nodded at me, but his expression was blank, frightened even. I set down my copy of Marie Claire and gave him a reassuring thumbs up. 20 minutes later, Jason entered the room of plastic head bubbles, his hair now coiled into dozens of tight rods, his face pale and bewildered. He sat down at the last available dryer, next to a woman who I'm quite certain was my third-grade music teacher, Mrs. Averick. She kept glancing over, trying to figure out how she knew me. So I lifted my magazine. By then, I'd moved on to Cosmopolitan and shielded my face with it. A buzzer went off, and Tina brought me back to her chair, where she removed the curlers, washed my hair, and then blow-dried it. I couldn't believe what I saw in the mirror. My hair was curlier than I expected, but it looked natural, even the part on the side that Tina created. There would be no more globs of perfume-scented product, no more stiff, crunchy, jagged edges, no more cowlicks popping up throughout the day. Now I was equal, normal, the person I'd always want to be. "I love it," I said to Tina in the mirror, and then I turned back to her. "Thank you." Afterward, Jason and I waited at the bus stop, staring at our reflections in the glass. Jason was solemn. His hair came out even curlier than mine. Maybe it hadn't grown out enough to perm, or maybe the curling rods were left in too long, but he looked like a French poodle. "Tina says the curls will relax in a few days," I said, cheerfully. But Jason said nothing. He just turned his head from side to side, studying this new alien hairstyle, his face growing more hopeless with each rotation. The bus came and we boarded. The passengers stared at us. At first I thought they were in awe of our hair, but by the end of the ride I realized we stank of hydrogen peroxide. If I could smell it, that meant the others could smell it tenfold. A man in front of us had to cover his mouth with his hand. We both wore baseball hats for the first 3 days back at school. On Thursday, we made a pledge to take them off, convinced that enough time had passed for the curls to loosen and not be so noticeable. Our first class together was theater arts. The class was predominantly female, so we figured it was a safe place for trying out bold hairstyles. The logic was that girls were more sensitive and understanding when it came to image makeovers. "Did you guys get your fucking hair permed?" said Katie Hanley as she entered the auditorium with a group of friends. "No," I said, defensively, while Jason slid down in his seat. Class started with some improv exercises. The teacher called a few students to the stage. "We need a guy up here, too." He looked for us, but didn't recognize the two curly heads in the back row. "Jason? Danny? Why do you look different?" "They got perms," someone screamed. "Can they do a rendition of Bridge Over Troubled Water?" someone else blurted out. "They can be Garfunkel and Garfunkel." The class erupted in laughter, along with the teacher, who took a while to regain his composure. As it turned out, the girls at school were merciless in their ridicule. They called us curly Q and pubic head, and when they laughed, it wasn't just a chuckle. It was a ferocious, knee-slapping belly laugh, the kind that brings tears to the eyes. "A fucking perm," they screamed, holding their stomachs, spit flying from their mouths. The boys, on the other hand, didn't even notice. Some gave me a second look and asked if I got a haircut. "Just trying some new mousse," I'd say, pointing at my hair, which was pencil straight 3 days ago and now looked like Michelangelo's David. A couple guys asked outright if I got a perm, to which I'd respond, snobbishly, "It's a body wave." And they'd just shrug and move on to something else. As the curls relaxed, so did my classmates' interest. After 2 weeks, my hair had settled into a more natural-looking, wavy state. The cocktail hair, precisely what I'd wanted. It's odd, but I felt so complete just because my hair had a natural wave and a part down the side. Traits that so many others take for granted, like a healthy bowel movement or an evening glass of wine. 2 months later, and all that remained of the perm was a lazy sweep at the bangs and a nice bend around my ears. Another 2 weeks, and the perm had disappeared completely. But its ghost was there. It came out in times of insecurity and teen angst, those desperate episodes of youth when I felt awkward and unpopular. The big party I didn't get invited to, or the teenage crush who wouldn't even smile back. The agony of adolescence seems like it will never end. Those were the moments when I heard the ghost of my perm loudest, as it whispered into my ear, "Nothing lasts forever, Danny. Not even permanence." I'm gonna move up a little bit and relax. So that was the story. And Dylan, what's going on there, man? What's going through my head? Why did I get three perms when I was in high school?
Well, when I read this story, and then when I listened to you now retell it, I had a few thoughts, a few things I could definitely relate to. I think the perfect hairstyle is the plight of every high school boy.
Is it?
I mean, maybe I'm just projecting my experience onto everybody else, but
I relate to it.
I feel like it's a thing that everybody wrestles with. I mean, I have distinct memory of, you know, standing in front of the mirror and trying to sculpt my hair into some kind of like impossible perfect structure.
But you have great hair. So was it really? I mean, is it really the? You know, you can relate to it, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I want to have a little dialogue about this. So, I mean, like, I'm looking at your hair right now, and I'm like, you can mold that into anything.
My hair's gotten better with time.
Really?
I don't think it was.
Mine has too.
I don't think it was that great when I was
I
was younger. Either that, or I've just grown. I've been around my hair long enough to where it's you know, I'm accepting.
You develop a relationship with your hair.
I think in the beginning, just like yourself, I think your hair and your your journey with your hair is a metaphor for you know, the same kind of journey you experience with getting to know and like yourself. You know,
that's deep.
It's the hand you're dealt.
I totally agree.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you know, I think the hair is just one of many things when we're younger that we haven't necessarily come to terms with. But it's an easy thing to attempt to control or wrangle into some kind of, you know. And really, I mean, I would spend all the time combing it, you know, sculpting it in front of the mirror with. You know, I grew up in the 90s, too. You're a little older than I am. But, yeah, I had a lot of gel experiences and experimenting with different kinds of combs and brushes.
Yeah.
And, you know, the expectation that you're going to get it to exactly where you want it to be is, I mean, it's ridiculous because that doesn't exist, you know?
Right.
It's funny how, you know, that was the thing that, like, that was the part of myself, physical or, you know, emotional, behavioral, that I chose to give a pretty good chunk of time to every day.
Right.
You know, to try to get that in order, because that was going to be the thing that was going to be like my golden ticket that was going to fast track me to whatever place I imagined was going to make me feel, you know, happy and make me feel okay or whatever, going to provide me with the ability to get the girl that I wanted or have the experience that I wanted, you know, where, like, in reality, I probably could have focused on any number of pieces of internal conflict that that would have really helped me out a lot more.
So for me, rather than spend $70 getting a perm, I should have took the $70 and went to a shrink and said, why the fuck do I want to get a perm, dude? Like, well, what's my problem?
Not even that. I think, I think that maybe you could have done that, but I think what it really is it comes down to, like, that I would have had the patience to deal with some of the behavioral stuff that was, you know, really problematic for me.
Yeah,
you know?
But I mean, isn't that like, it's true, but isn't, I mean, like, we're talking about the teenage years, you know, like, part of this story, I think, inadvertently for me, was about youth, you know what I mean? And like, not the stupidity, not the insolence of youth, but like, you know, kids are impressionable and they do, you know, they're kind of fickle, you know, about images. They go through a bunch of different images and they mimic stuff, you know? I mean, it seems kind of like an innocent thing in a way.
Right. You know? I think the perm thing, it's like a great demonstration of like, well, you know, I'm going to try as hard as I can to change what I've been given instead of accepting and working with it, you know? Well, and I guess that's what I was trying to say is I wish I would have had, you know, the emotional, which is a ludicrous thing to say, like you were saying, when you're that age, but I wish I would have had the emotional understanding to realize that, okay, that's what I need to work on, not changing my hair.
There is something, though, like to take it one kind of level, because I agree, there is sort of like a fundamental thing that this story, perfecting, agonizing over your hair. You know, I remember I have very long earlobes, and I used to, it kind of bothered me when I was younger, and I'd be like, God, I wish I could just like take a scissors and just snip like the very bottoms of my, make them shape them normally, you know, because they were long, they look like my dad's. We have like long ears in our family, which is
long lobes.
We have long lobes. And I would like press them back and be like, oh, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, like, look in the mirror. Yeah. Press
I
my
could get
earlobe.
My ears pinned like a Doberman.
But, you know, but I got over it. It wasn't a big deal. I used to have a space between my teeth, and I'd be like, ugh. I went to the dentist when I was like 14, and I was like, can we fix the space between my teeth? And he was like, just give it a few years. It might clear up, and it did. But the thing about hair is like I would look at people. I look at your hair. I look at other people's hair. When they have that, when they have volume, there's something about volume. There's something about body and fullness that it's not just about, it's not just like, oh, I have a birthmark or a freckle here, or, you know, I don't like my calf hair. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, you know, it's like that the hair is kind of like the, I don't know what the hell the poetic or word is, but it's like the like thing a, about it can, you, it's your style. Yeah. You know what I mean? And mine was just dead.
Right.
It was deflated. It was dead strands. And you think of like volume in
strength.
Hair. You think of strength. That's exactly what it is. You think of strength. Yeah. I would look at people with wavy hair and I'd be like, where does the wave come from? Like, how does it stay that way? How you cut your hair off, you could shave your head and it grows back wavy. Like that means it's not just, that means there's something inside of you that is, that can
deficient.
Dance.
Oh,
it can
if,
dance.
If you don't
no,
have
if you,
the wave
if you have
there.
The wave,
yes.
You know, there's a part of you that just, you can like intuitively bob and weave, you know what I mean? And like, meanwhile, I had this like, God, I mean, I don't know how else I can, lampshade was the only way to, I mean, it was literally like, I, like the kid in The Shining.
Yeah.
It wasn't even that good. He has better hair than I do. And I'd just be like, I didn't meet anybody. There was one dude when I got into high school, the one kid in my high school, I'm not gonna say his name, but he had similar hair than mine. And I look at him sometimes and I'd be like, dude, thank God there's you. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not just the only asshole with hair like this.
Right.
But then as he got into like 10th and 11th grade, he started parting it. I noticed that he could part his hair to the side and I'd
it
be
would
like,
stay.
Fuck. And I would be like, you're an asshole. I don't like you anymore. I'm alone again. And it really was like that. But you know what I'm saying though? There is, it's like the hair. I don't want to make an exception. I don't want to turn myself into an exception, but the hair and the straightness, you know, and like the, just the duh.
You're right.
You know?
The limpness.
It's limp. It's flaccid.
Yeah.
It's like it makes your whole body feel flaccid. And people, it's not like I was teased. I mean, look, believe me, like this is like a total luxury problem. I mean, there are people out there who don't have limbs. I'm not an asshole. The point of this conversation is to have some fun and talk about stupid shit. But people would tease me. You know what I mean? My cousin called me Wilson. And that's where I got the tennis ball thing from, you know? Other people, you know, when I got to junior high, people would tease me about my hair, you know. I mean, you know, not a big deal. It wasn't that bad. But still, I was just like, Jesus.
You know, the other part of the story that I liked was you were talking about going through the park and seeing the homeless guy and seeing his perfect head of hair and wishing, you know, you being willing to trade places with the guy because he had, you know, that beautiful head of hair, even though I'm sure his circumstances were overall were way shittier than yours. And
he pissed himself earlier.
And you know, I think I had a recent experience. You know, I read your story in prep kind of for doing this and a few weeks ago, and then I was downtown walking around and I had a similar experience where I was walking down the street and there was a homeless dude between two cars just taking a pee right there in broad daylight. And he had his dick out in his hand. And he had, like, a very good-sized dick, like, flaccid. You know, he was peeing. And, like, for that in that moment when I locked eyes with him and his dick, I thought, you know, like, I would trade places with this dude to have a penis like that.
Right. You know? You know, it's, yeah, that's, I a similar thing just happened to me, actually. Well, not just happened to me, but going back to bowel disease, but where I work, our office is right next to the Pine Street Inn.
You guys measured each other's dicks?
No, there was no, I haven't seen a penis. I haven't seen a homeless penis, but even it's like gnarlier, but I went to, so there's a street right next to my office and, the MBTA bus depot is on this street. We've walked down it when we go to that pita place and, it's kind of like, there's nothing going on there. It's not exactly secluded, but there's nothing happening there. There's not a lot of people. There's no houses. There's not a lot of stuff going on. And apparently, like, it's a place where homeless people would go and defecate. They would go there and take shits. And the first year, it doesn't really happen anymore. I think they kind of cleaned it and whoever cracked down on it. But the first year or two that my office moved to this location, it was disgusting. I mean, every time we walked to that pita place, there would be huge piles of human excrement on the sidewalk. It was not... The biggest dog in the world couldn't drop a load like this.
In the summertime, that must have been terrible.
It was terrible, dude. Yeah. I'm not trying to be, you know, like
gross,
but I mean, I didn't want to eat, you know,
like
you had to kind of look away. But at first I remember like looking and seeing this, like these piles of shit. And I was like, dude, these are the healthiest piles of shit I've ever seen, you know? And I've just like felt the resentment.
Wish I could shit like that.
Exactly what it was, because I'm like, dude, I exercise, I, you know, I, all this stuff.
You're
I try to take care
right.
of my, I'm doing everything right. And
you're
I can't take a shit
trash.
Like that.
Yeah.
I can't even take a shit like that. Yeah. Like they have great hair, big penises, and they take the most incredible shits.
Right.
And you know, like it kind of makes you a little resentful, I think.
Kind of makes you reconsider having a house.
All right, so now we're gonna get somebody on the phone right now from Los Angeles, California. He's actually on the phone and he's here. This is Jason. He was the guy who got his hair permed with me, and I believe we got our hair permed multiple times. I know I got mine like three times. Did you get two perms, Jason?
Yeah, I got two perms. Each one of them was fantastic.
Jason.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. It wasn't a perm.
It was
a body
wave.
Wave.
I know. All right? That's in the story, dude. When you listen to this, you'll hear. You'll
Wait,
hear.
What is a body wave exactly? It just makes it.
A body
it makes
wave
it wave.
Is a masculine way. Yeah. I mean, it's just like they call it cologne instead of perfume.
Right.
You find manly ways to make, you know, women things manly.
Right.
The curlers are bigger and looser.
But were your was your guys' hair, was it curled up like an afro?
Nah, it was like, well, it was when you first got it done, you were like totally curly cube, but then you would have to like blow dry it, pull it out. It was a process. It was like a good 40-minute a day process to keep from being super curly.
Right. But it was awesome.
And
dude. Sorry, go ahead.
The goal was to have your hair look like the poster of Tom Cruise from Days of Thunder on your wall.
Right. I heard that was your benchmark. One scene in particular, though, right?
Well, I mean, when he pulls up on the bike through the smoke, that's the time that, you know, you decide in life that you want to be Tom Cruise.
Right.
The other hair reference, can you tell me what it was besides Tom Cruise? This is like, I'm quizzing the guy who was
Ba-boom.
In the story. What's that?
Ba-boom? Ba-boom?
No. We can talk about that later. No, the other, like, movie hair reference. We'll see if the story syncs up to real life right now. We'll see if you remember. The other hair reference from a movie, it's not a Tom Cruise movie, but you said, you used to say that I want my hair to look just like that. It was a scene from a movie, in a movie we always talk about. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, my God.
I'm putting you on the spot.
All of a sudden, I think of Booker. I think Richard Grieco.
Well, that was the 21 Jump Street. We talked about that.
That was your reference from the pre-perm, when you had the...
That was
pre-perm.
That was pre-perm.
Yeah. Or, no, well...
It was pre-perm.
21 Jump Street, still Grieco, but...
Booker. Yeah, Grieco.
I didn't think anybody would have got Booker in the story. But, no, Jason...
Sonny Crockett?
Sonny Crockett's a good hair, too. We'll get to that. But you know what I'm talking about?
But oh, it's got to be... Is it Pump Up the Volume?
No, I'm not crazy about the Pump Up the Volume hair. The Christian
Slater hair?
It's because he's got straight hair, too, man. He's got... His hair's pretty rough. I mean, even with all the stylists, like, I didn't think that was great. Although Heather's was pretty good. You know what it was, though, dude?
What was it?
Point Break, when Reeves jumps... when he jumps...
At the end of the movie, when he gets out of the Jeep.
No, not that, dude. That wasn't the hair that you wanted, dude. You know what the hair you wanted? When he jumps out of the airplane without the parachute, and he goes and he hits the ground.
Yeah, and he lands in the desert.
And he lands in the desert. And there's
right,
like
and
five...
his hair's all like dusty.
What are some other big hairstyles?
Well, I had the Vanilla Ice. I mean...
That's right. All right, so let's talk about that for a second. Now, you mentioned Vanilla Ice, because now Jason, in high school, went through some... like because part of what we were talking about, dude, and you can hear this like if you listen to this with the other four people who are going to listen to this, but we were talking about like... image in youth, and you know, and you went through some phases. You went through some like pretty drastically different kind of image phases in high school. Am I right?
Oh, hell yeah!
I mean,
can you
take us through a tour? Take Dylan and take the audience, and there will be people who are going to listen to this. At least this one. They might not listen. They might not listen after this show, but they'll tune in for one. But take Dylan on a little tour of Cooliard, who I call him Cools, by the way. That's his, like, his nickname.
Let's see. Well, okay, there was, it started off with Teen Idol. It was like the Corey Haim phase. We had to have like, you know, like a shiny bracelet, like holes in the knees and like safety pins at the bottom of the pants and like, you know, a tie-dye Batman t-shirt. And then I moved right into the city. So it was like Southie guy. I had like Jerbos and like Champion sweatshirt and like Gazelles and like a matching hat.
So you moved, you were in Newton. We went to Newton North together. Then you moved to South Boston. To we were in high school, and that's when I started hanging out with Jason. He lived in a him and his mom in an apartment in Southie, and it was I thought it was the coolest fucking place in the world. I'd go. I'd never been to South. I'd never been to Boston. You know what I mean?
Did your parents get divorced, and your mom moved you out there?
No. We were living in Newton, and then there was a good deal on a condo in Southie, and then we went there.
But you could still go to go to Newton North.
You kept an address or something.
Yeah, we just lied about my address, and I took like two trains and a bus.
But it was awesome. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world going out to South Boston. So anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off. So you were in South Boston, and then you got into the Southie, the Boston, Jabot's.
Exactly.
We talked about that before. What was it, Gazelles too?
Yeah, Gazelles with the, you know, you had a few pair of Gazelles. They match the color of your Champion sweatshirt.
And what about a turtleneck under the Champion? Did you ever do that in the colder?
You know what? I never went that far.
I remember that look.
That's going far.
Because I wanted to wear a gold chain and then people could see it. And I wasn't a gold chain over a turtleneck person.
Right.
It didn't happen.
All right, cool. All right, so I remember that. So that's like 10th grade, right? Or not even.
Right.
9th grade, maybe? 10th grade?
Yeah, probably 9th.
Because you still have a few more looks that we haven't even got to yet.
Then things really took off. Then what happened was... I discovered that I could dance really well. So I went to a party. There was this girl, Katie, who was friends with all the Medco kids, who were the inner city urban kids, black kids who got bussed in.
Right.
And she had a birthday party, and I'd been watching TV and learning how to dance. So I went to this party, and like everybody was dancing, and I just started busting out these moves. And everybody was like, what? And I was like, hi. And then I became friends with these kids.
What kind of dancing?
So, you know, like Kid and Play,
like MC
Hammer. You know what I mean? Like the dancing that was popular at the time.
Right. 91.
And you really had not...
Hip-hop dancing.
You had never really attempted it before. It was like a spur of the moment kind of thing and it just clicked?
Well, no. I would do it at home and stuff, you know, like... And I realized if I watched MTV or a music video, I could like pretty instantly replicate the dance move.
Right.
You know, I was like, nice. So, you were good.
I will testify to that.
Right. So they were all like, what? So then we became friends with all those kids and I started spending more time in their towns and cities and with them and my clothes changed to like baggy pants and like cross colors and jeans with suede on the front and like all
Dylan
that
knows
stuff.
What you're talking about.
Yeah,
I remember that stuff. Yeah,
I was going to merry-go-round. Stores called merry-go-round and Chess King.
Yeah,
and so I hung out with them for a while, and we started a rap group and everything, and that was going good. But then there was like a near-death experience in the inner city, so I stopped hanging out over there.
A near-death experience? And your death? Your near-death?
Yeah, my death. Yeah, my death.
How old were you now at this point?
Like 16 and a half.
All right, so take us into the next phase now.
The next phase is easy. I watched fucking Point Break and decided it was fucking Levi's t-shirt and cowboy boots time. So, and it was like as far away from the urban dress I was doing.
Right.
So, took my earrings out. I was like, hey, everybody, I'm super white guy. I don't want to get killed. How you doing?
Let me ask you something, dude. Does your voice change? Like, the inflection dialect in your voice, like, it's got to have a natural, it plays with the image, right? Like, a little bit. I mean, it must, right?
Of course.
Okay, all right.
I haven't heard it as he's transitioning from
the story,
from
exactly.
story to story.
Which is perfect, dude. Yeah. It's perfect. All right, keep going.
Yeah, so then I put on, you know, the tight jeans and stuff, and then it was, you know, Utah o'clock, and started doing that for a little while. But then, shortly thereafter, fucking Booker came along, so I bought like a leather jacket with a bunch of zippers. So I just added a jacket to the white t-shirt and jeans and changed the cowboy boots to like black boots.
And the bandana, that's in the story. Tell me that happened in real life.
Oh, yeah, the bandana, right.
You wore a bandana.
Of course, yeah.
Which was popular then.
I would like spray my hair up like 4 or 5 inches off my head and then bandana it like, not a bandana, over the head, like tied onto it like a kung fu master.
Right.
So that happened and then it just started to go to bizarro land. Then I started to get into rap groups, but like cheesy ones, like boy band rap groups. So I actually bought a pair of American flag overalls from
this
from
is the Randy of the like Redwoods a, face
from like a store that sold for women, but like I was in there with my girlfriend, I saw these American flag overalls and I was like, damn, I need those, so I bought them.
That's what I say.
And I wore them, so I would wear American flag overalls, like the whole thing was an American flag, like from like, you know, buckle to the bottom where the boot was,
right?
And I would wear like a button like paisley shirt under it, like a bright like white and like orange one, and like patent leather shoes with like silver tips, and my hair was now just like 6 inches off my head, hairsprayed high, and I would wear like thick sunglasses, and I just looked like a freak.
Right.
And that's when I was Randy in the Redwoods.
Do you remember Randy in the Redwoods, dude?
Sure.
We talked about this. Okay.
Yeah. So Randy in the Reds stuck around for a while. And then after that, it just kind of like...
It mellowed out a little.
Apart. Yeah, it started to mellow.
It mellowed
into
like...
Those changes were hard.
But then it was
Let me ask a question. Yeah. Do you think, on the inside, when you look back at that time now, do you think you liked yourself when you were going through all those phases, or you're trying to...
I love myself.
Okay. You weren't trying to like, accomplish, fill some hole by being those other things.
No. It was just awesome.
You were exploring.
I just stumbled into what I liked.
Right.
I was lucky in high school. I didn't give a fuck what anybody thought.
Right. It's not like you were taking on these personas in order to achieve some kind of thing. You just found preferences, and then they just naturally morphed into an image for a certain amount of time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Interesting. I think that that's one way to have it, because I was talking with Danny about, you know, his story and like relating to his hairstyling experience. And my experience was, with the hair thing in particular, like it was like an easy thing to be able to control about yourself that you didn't like. You know what I mean? Almost like a metaphor for other, you know, behavioral or emotional things that you like didn't have the ability to kind of manage at that point in your life. But the hair was a thing you could kind of, you know, twist and turn and manipulate to make yourself feel better about yourself. But that wasn't really your experience.
I'm not that deep. I just saw something. I was like, that's cool. I'm going to do that.
I don't want to say it's better, but it seems a little more fun.
Yeah. I mean, I remember a girl that I dated being like, you're a chameleon. Like one day I'll be wearing like cowboy boots and, you know, pants. And the next day I'd be branding the Redwoods. Like for a while, it was just whatever I wanted from one day to the next.
Right.
But
let's go back to the perm for a second, because I still
So does the perm come after all
this? Oh, that's right. Yeah, where does the perm come in?
The perm was in there somewhere like along the lines of Johnny Utah.
But it was after Richard Grieco.
But the thing was, here's the thing, the perm worked with everything, cuz I would leave it tight and curly with a bandana when I put on like some homeboy. Well,
what the hell's the point of getting a perm if you're going to have a bandana up there? You could just have straight hair. I mean, wouldn't it be like kind of
the
same thing?
Because it was like Joey McIntyre, kid.
Right.
Now we're the new kids. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
So you wear the bandana with like curly hair coming out of the
top. Did you get your question in, Dylan, about the chronology of the perm
or? Yeah.
Okay. Did you in the story, you know, there's the aftermath of getting the perm, especially in like theater arts class. I know you remember this. There was some humiliation. When I was telling you about the perm, you know, about that we were going to do this, I was like, yeah, you know, I mean, how insecure was I to walk into school with a perm? And you said, dude,
how secure are you?
You've got to be secure to walk into high school with a perm.
Dude, you walk into high school with a perm, dude. You got balls, bro. You got brass.
You walk right up to the toughest quarterback of the football team and punch him in the face. Be like, dude, I got
no,
a
you
perm.
No, you walk right up to the toughest quarterback on the team and kiss him on the cheek. That's how much balls you have. You're like, what's up, Todd? Mwah.
But, dude, when you first got the perm, weren't you kind of, when you first saw how curly your hair was, were you kind of like, oh, what the hell did I do?
Oh, I was angry. I was like, why am I a fucking see a pet? I remember. I was like, what curly. Is this?
It was curly.
And she was like, oh, it'll relax. You need to comb it out and all this stuff. But like, yeah, for the first week, it was like fucking looked like pubes. Like head
you
pubes.
Think this woman like, just this? Saw you as you guys as like marks? Like, here's a way to make a quick 140 bucks, 70 bucks
I
off
so.
Each
no,
of you.
No,
or do you think
she
was like, okay, I'm going to give these guys something that they really want. I'm going to help them out.
I'll tell you exactly what she said. She's like, you're hot shit. She's like, it's cool that you have enough.
She was a townie.
She was like, it's cool that you have enough to, like, you know, balls at your age to know fashion and stuff. I was like, yeah, exactly.
I got to be honest with you. I loved my perm. Because I have straight, we've already talked about it ad nauseum. I'm not going to go in anymore, but I loved.
You have Asian man hair. It all grows forward.
I know.
It all grows forward and, like, super, like, thin and, like, not a bend in it.
I know, it's terrible.
Asian man. There, we just excluded some Asians from liking your show.
Man, I'm gonna hang up on it now. Yeah, perms all forever, right. Dude. I would get a perm today if I could. I don't have enough hair, but I would get. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't get a perm today.
I wouldn't either. No way.
I wouldn't either.
I have less balls now. I couldn't walk into work with a perm. I mean, I guess I could, but I'm more self-conscious now than I was when I was a teenager.
Really? I don't know, dude. I'm missing teeth. I mean, I get on.
I definitely feel less self-conscious now than I did as a teenager.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Less self. Yeah.
So right. we went in opposite directions. We reversed. You went one way. Yeah.
What do you mean he went one way?
He was free of being self-conscious
as a youth, now.
and it increased over time as he got older.
Yeah, true.
That's interesting.
Weird. It's starting to level off now, though. It's starting to go away again. Like I'm starting to be like, well, it's a shit.
Yeah, right. That's Have you ever thought about acting?
Yeah, every day.
All right, dude. We'll talk to you later, man. That's Jason Couliard from Sherman Oaks, California, in a parking lot of a Starbucks. So we'll talk to him next time.
Let me leave you with this, okay?
Yeah.
Click and Clack were sitting on a boat. Clack jumped over into the water, and the only one left was...
That's terrible, dude. What an ass. Wow. Well, that was an experiment. We should name this episode Warning Signs. Red flags to look for in your youth. No, I'm just kidding. What do you think, dude?
You know, I was the kind of person growing up, I had to seek out a bunch of different images, a bunch of different appearances before I could really find out, who I was. I had to present myself to the world in a bunch of different ways that I thought were going to make me seem cool before I could really become secure with myself. And I don't regret any of those things. Some of them are cringeworthy and some of them, were a little bit embarrassing. But ultimately, you know, they informed who I am today, for better or for worse. And I think that your story embodies that sentiment. I think hearing from Jason, you know, we heard another take on that experience. And, I think people are going to be able, I think this will resonate with people because I think most people go through that.
Right. All right. Well, listen, thank you, Dylan. Thank you, Jason, I think. I don't know. But my kid's a lunatic. All right. Well, that's it. Let's wrap it up. Let's get out of here. I guess the moral of the story is, be happy with who you are. But, if you want to go out and make an asshole out of yourself like I did for the first 38 years of my life, then there's nothing wrong with that, too, because, humiliation and falling on your face just kind of, like you said, it kind of makes you the person you are. So I encourage it. That's why we call the show The Greater Fool. So real quickly, if anybody has any suggestions, ideas, comments, anything at all, we have an email. It's thegreaterfoolpodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, this is Dylan Schwartz, Danny Pellegrini, saying sayonara. We'll see you next time.
Take it easy.
Bye.
That was good.
Yeah.